case this morning is Jones against Barnhart. Mr. Pierce.
May it please the court. In our society today, we are constantly bombarded with multimedia displays. The now generation rocks to sound bites. Not so in the law. Grounded in the Socratic method, in the principles of logic, we seek the bedrock principles. Thus, we are confronted today with two lines of cases that are actually two sides of the same coin. On the one hand, the treating general practitioner, the old Doc Adams of Gunsmoke fame, may have a propensity to want to assist the patient and friend, perhaps having treated the family for many years. Conclusory statements by such physicians, therefore, will not necessarily allow you to win a disability case. The other side of the coin, if we have an expert neurosurgeon who has treated you for 3 years, who has performed lumbar surgery upon you and observed the condition of your spine, who has actually seen the films of the special image studies, who has treated you after the surgery and after any other physician has ever commented upon your case for a long time, who has observed your response to attempts to increase your activities under the watchful eye of trained physical therapists, and who has recorded multiple specific signs, symptoms, and laboratory findings as defined in the Social Security regulations, then you should win your case, unless there is something very unusual going on. Additionally, these lines of cases, these two sides of the coin, have been explained by the court in such cases as the Micah's case, where they have been harmonized and explained. This is not a case like the Dixon case that has been relied upon and mentioned by the district court and the commissioner, where there has been a conclusory statement by a general practitioner. This is a case like the many other cases that we've cited, including Sarafsky, Allen, that line of cases that say the judge can't play doctor. He's got to decide the case based on evidence and law. Now, the commissioner argues, to the contrary, that the final decision is up to the administrative law judge. And certainly nobody disagrees with that. However, the adjudicator in an administrative action does not regulate by fiat. He is still subject to the rule of law and due process. And the decision, although ultimately his, must be made based upon the evidence that is substantial. And of course, that is the key, the substantiality of the evidence. The applicable regulation, 404.1527, is certainly...
Counsel, your time is short. You might want to devote it to making your argument about why, in your view, this decision is not supported by substantial evidence.
Thank you, Your Honor. It is not supported by substantial evidence because the non-examining residual functional capacity assessments upon which the ALJ allegedly relied are not substantial when weighed according to the rule of law and the regulations and the due process requirements of 404.1527, which he never did, by the way, because had he done so, it would have exposed his faulty weighing and logic. The inconsistencies that he alleged, basically, he did not specify what those inconsistencies were. The inconsistencies he alleged in the medical evidence consisted of his own lay opinions reciting a few of Dr. Davis's findings, and those findings are very similar to findings that have been utilized in a number of the cases by this court to find that there was objective evidence supporting physicians' opinions. So he did not specify any alleged inconsistencies. He utilized his own medical opinions in making the comments that he did regarding Dr. Davies' findings. He misstated and understated some of those actual findings and ignored many of the other supporting findings. And the only other inconsistencies alleged were sporadic daily activities, which again, the precedent here, the decision made by this court in the past, have often commented upon similar alleged inconsistencies. The regulations and the rulings explain that there is a difference between sporadic attempts to do something at home versus sustained employment activities in the workplace. And the activities which the ALJ alleged as inconsistent, such as the comment that the physical therapist had made about walking up to 1.5 miles per day, have been considered by this court in these other cases. It's not inconsistent for a man to try to walk up to 1.5 miles on certain days when he's trying to increase his activities that under the physical therapy's guidelines, compared to Dr. Davies saying he could maybe stand or walk an hour in an 8-hour workday. That's not inconsistent. The ALJ failed to explain how these things that he alleged were inconsistent were actually inconsistent. In the Allen case, the non-examining physician's opinions were not entitled to substantial weight even though they looked at all of the records that the treating physician had. In this case, these fellows did not look at that all of the evidence. There was much more evidence that came in later, including MRI and CT findings that only Dr. Davies observed. In this case, Dr. Davies is not a parochial and biased general physician. He is a neurosurgeon. The guy that's actually done the surgery and wants this guy to go back to work and wants to be successful, and neurosurgeons have egos and they do know the difference between this case and another case. This is not the only case he's done surgery upon. In cases like Whitney, we've got degenerative arthritis. We've got a personal physician who testified at the hearing. The clinical findings are certainly not as great as what we have in this case. There was no indication of a specific assessment of functional work-related limitations. We can go on and on in discussing these cases. In the Sibley case, the claimant walked 1.5 miles per day if the weather was good, another mile in the afternoon, and only took Advil and Motrin for pain. Another degenerative arthritis case. We had lost motion and pain and disc bulging. Many of the same findings that Dr. Davies specifically recorded in this case over a period of many months. The non-examining physician's opinions were given only 5 months after the lumbar surgery. The commissioner argues that Thank you, Your Honor. Since my time is up, I better stop. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Pierce. Ms. Siegel.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Catherine Siegel. I represent the Commissioner of Social Security in this case. I would like to focus on the evidence before the ALJ in this case rather than on other cases. The most important opinion in the record that the claimant relies on is Dr. Davies' opinion from October of 1999. Now, the ALJ had a very good reason for rejecting this opinion, and it was because in that opinion, the doctor misstated what the record actually showed. He said that the claimant was limited to less than sedentary work because an imaging study from January of 1999 showed impingement, scar tissue that impinged on the nerve root, on the lumbar nerve root. And if you look at the doctor's actual findings from January of 1999, Dr. Davies' actual clinical records and the actual CT scan, the imaging scans that he talks about, they don't show that. They show that there was no herniation in the lumbar nerve root, that there was scar tissue, but it didn't impinge on any nerves. And that's a very significant mistake that he made in his opinion, and it provided a good basis for the ALJ to reject it. We also have an opinion from Dr. Kolb that the claimant is disabled, and he said that the claimant was disabled by a back impairment, but the ALJ also had a good reason for rejecting that opinion because Dr. Kolb never treated the claimant's back condition. He only treated the knee condition, and he treated the knee condition for about 2 months after the claimant fell, and he did arthroscopic surgery, and the 2 months of findings from Dr. Kolb in the record have absolutely no reference to back condition. So it's clear that Dr. Kolb based his opinion about a disabling back impairment completely on the claimant's own statements and allegations, and not on any objective evidence. And that was also a valid reason for the ALJ to reject that opinion. What the ALJ did base his opinion on was two doctors who reviewed all of the records, or who reviewed the important records of the back impairment, Dr. O and Dr. Wichterman. Both of those doctors laid out findings that the MRI scans and the CT scans did not show herniation. They laid out their reasoning and their findings that they relied upon. And although the claimant states that we should not rely, or that the ALJ should not have relied on the state agency physicians because they didn't see some of the evidence, if you look at the evidence that was submitted after the state agencies rendered their opinions, it really would not change their opinions. There's no change in the back findings. The back findings that come in after the state agency physicians are essentially the same. They show no herniation, no impingement on the nerve roots. Same thing, same kind of findings as far as no gross weakness, and straight leg raising is about the same between 60 and 90 degrees. Those kinds of findings are exactly the same kind of findings that they considered when they rendered their opinion about the light work. The other evidence that was submitted after the state agency physicians had, again, to do with Dr. Kolb's opinion, which, as I've discussed, would not change their opinion about his back impairment because he didn't have any back findings. He didn't treat his back condition. Also, the other evidence that came in after the state agency physician was the opinion of Dr. Davies, the October 1999 opinion. And again, that one it would not change their decision because it was based on a faulty statement about the evidence. Plaintiff also makes some other claims in his brief that I would just like to clear up that are incorrect. He claims that he has scar tissue after the surgery that caused back pain. And the record clearly shows that the scar tissue did not impinge on the nerve root. It did not cause any disc herniation that would normally be associated with pain complaints. And so that claim is just clearly refuted by the evidence. Also, he claims that there was damage to his nerve roots and associated tissue, and that there was somehow a relation between the knee impairment and the back impairment. And that the record, again, does not show any nerve damage related to a back impairment. It doesn't show that the back impairment caused his knee problems. And the knee problems resolve with surgery, and it's not a degenerative condition. The other point he makes, again, is claiming that the objective back test showed impingement of the fecal sac and the lumbar nerve root. And again, report after report from January of 1999 and September of 1999 of the actual MRI scan findings show that there wasn't any impingement on the nerve root. The ALJ's credibility finding was supported by the record. He cited the objective findings that I've just talked about. Also, he talked about the claimant's activities. And the claimant's testimony was very instructive in that regard. The claimant said at the hearing that he spent his day watching his 18-month-old daughter while his wife worked, and he also did household chores. He also talked to his physical therapist about his activities and complained.
I think it's probably unnecessary for you to just recite what the ALJ said. We've read it.
All right. Well, the record clearly supports the ALJ's findings, and substantial evidence supports our position. Our position is based on his findings. Do you have any particular questions you would like me to answer?
Looks like we do not.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Pierce?
I'm sure the court has it well read, these findings from the imaging studies and the record. I certainly disagree with what opposing counsel has indicated in respect to the flattening of the nerve roots in the area of the surgery, the extensive enhancing scar tissue shown in those various images upon which Dr. Davies specifically relied in his assessment, and I trust that the court will observe those details. Also, again, as far as the activities that are mentioned, the court has indicated that it knows what those activities are, and we'll compare those with his previous cases. There is indication in these studies that there could be a ruptured disc or additional herniation, at least a bulge. There's an area below the area that was surgically operated on that is problematic. And again, the basic thing is these are medical issues. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.